Next Step 293, January 16, 2014.
This is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. What you're about to listen to was an episode of The Next Step with Father Vazquez. We thank you for downloading or picking up a CD copy of this audio broadcast. Here, Father Vazquez provides a very distinctive and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy. It is the means for providing people an intelligent and practical answer to life's difficulties, based on the solid principles of love, faith and hope as expressed by our Lord Jesus Christ. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and of course, the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient orthodoxy. Our commitment at epostle.net is to provide a medium for apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe. So we invite you to turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Hey, this is Father Vazquez, priest of the Armenian Church, welcoming you to The Next Step, episode number 293 of The Next Step, podcast that looks at life, at the very fabric of our being, through one of the most ancient of all Christian traditions, Armenian Orthodoxy, polished up for today. That polished look is called an Armodoxy look. We're inviting you to take that look with us, take a step with us. This is a podcast that is part of the expanding vision of the In His Shoes mission. Hey, if you're ready, I know I am. Let's take the next step. Hey, good to have you with us today. It is rather a hot day today in Southern California, actually 85 degrees. Yeah, the middle of January, right in the middle of winter, 85 degrees. I ran air conditioning this morning in the car. Yeah, it is unusual. Yeah, a little bit too unusual, actually, because we had some wildfires flare up overnight. And we saw pictures of it on the news. And this morning, right in our backyard, a lot of ashes falling down. But they're still up in the hills. And, of course, there is a danger to civilization all here and there. In Southern California, well, this is it. You know, it's like it is a desert that has been inhabited. Southern California, Los Angeles Basin. Very few people know it's actually a desert. They brought in water and, we've made it livable. And this is one of the byproducts, shall we say, or one of the outcomes, right? I mean, you're taking life in your own hands. You're going to be creating. You're creating a society. You're creating an environment. Well, you also have to take some of the responsibility. And that's one of the big responsibilities. Beautiful place that we live here in Southern California, but taking responsibility for the environment, for the circumstances that we create around it. And certainly the drought, not having enough water to sustain life down here. It's an issue. It's a very, very big issue that sometimes in capitalistic societies, it's hard to reckon with, because obviously if you have enough money, you can have enough water. But that doesn't really answer the big questions, does it? Anyway, that's a conversation for another day. I know, I shouldn't be leaving you for that. Don't look at me like that. Ken's looking at me like, okay, keep going. No, I'm not going to keep going because I wanted to get through a couple topics. In a few minutes, we're going to have Hadash Chilingerian, good friend of mine. I've spoken to him spoken about him many times. He's been on this show. He even had a segment in this show a few years ago. He's going to be joining us for a conversation about relevancy. How relevant? How do you get relevancy into faith, into the dynamics of the church? Actually, I just came back from a meeting at the diocese. We were with the archbishop, and toward the end of the meeting, he said, "Why don't you join us? We're going to be meeting with some of the kids." And the local Armenian schools, I believe three or four of them that had graduating classes. They brought in their graduating classes, the seniors, I'd say maybe about 100 kids. And we talked to them. We talked to them about the church, about opportunities in their life, where they are, about becoming full human beings. And I mean this in the full sense of the word. It's not just enough that you're going to an Armenian school, but how do you react to the rest of the world? How do you react with the rest of the world? And again, that's the topic of relevancy, isn't it? That's making the church relevant so that kids are not attracted to it from the outside and saying, oh, that's something that I have to belong to. No, it's a relevant institution, so it's something that I want to belong to. I guess that's the basic key, isn't it? Anyway, we'll be talking about that in a few minutes. Before that, I left you last week with a teaser, didn't I? I was rushing off to a session of an ecumenical gathering. Actually, turned out to be people from all walks of life, including from the faith community. And I shared with you that I was going to be moderating this for the Western Diocese. It was dedicated to the slain civil rights leader, Dr. Martin Luther King. And of course, I grabbed at the opportunity, being one of my heroes. And you, those of you who have listened to The Next Step, those of you who have been engaged in the In Issues ministry, that know that that's one of the pillars of the ministry itself, the ability to put the faith in action, which I think Dr. King really becomes the model for that. You know, it's not enough to just say that I'm a Christian, but those words, if I believe that Jesus Christ spoke those words, and I believe that Jesus Christ is God, then I have to believe that there is something more to these words than just for me to pay lip service or just for me to wear it as a shirt. And certainly I use that metaphor because it clicks with me as an Armenian Christian with Vartanants, who said exactly the same thing with the General Vartan back in the 5th century. And I says, this is not just some shirt. This faith is something that we believe in. It's not a shirt that you could just take off and put on whenever you want. No, it's part and parcel of our being. And if I'm going to be faithful to the Christian message, if I'm going to be a true Christian, then I have to take to heart. I have to believe it. Okay, you either believe it or you don't. And so you got some interesting things over here, because now Jesus says, you know, he says, you have heard that it's okay to love your friends, but hate your enemies. What I'm telling you is love your enemies. Pray for those who persecute you. And now you got Dr. King coming in and he's saying, okay, that has to mean something. Now, how do I love? How do I love my enemy? How do I love the man who wants to kill me? How do I love a man who wants to come and hang my children, string up my children and kill them? These are intense questions beyond belief. But Dr. King struggled with these, and he delivered. He delivered an answer to these. So I was the moderator at this event, and I'm going to put a link on our show notes to a couple of these things, one of which is a show that I did a few years ago, linking Dr. King along with St. John the Baptist. It actually was one of the most popular of our Next Step, having thousands of hits on the internet. And up until this day, I don't know, is it? Yeah, I think it still is. It's the number one rated show that we've done in the 290 plus episodes. Dr. King and St. John the Baptist, finding some similarity. So anyway, there will be a link on today's show notes. I won't, you know, rehash that, but I do want to share some ideas with you because it was interesting. We had maybe about 400 or 500 people attending this event last week, and we were all inside of the church sanctuary, the St. Leon Cathedral. Now, most of the people, I'd say 95% of the people, were not only not Armenian, not only not Armenian Christian, but they had maybe never ventured into an Armenian church. And so I thought, as a moderator, it would be important for me to share some of the nuances of the church. And in talking about Dr. King, before I started talking about Dr. King, I let them know that one of the nuances of what any Armenian church that you walk into, you see a lot of saints, whether it's on the icons, whether it's in the pictures, certainly in the prayer life of the church, you hear about the saints in the prayers that are recited. But something that you really don't notice, or you wouldn't see, it's that each pillar, each wall, each area in the sanctuary is consecrated and dedicated in the name of a saint. You don't see this, right? But I felt it important that I mention this to our guests, because saints are not God, nor are they endowed with godly powers. They are people with all the human frailties and all the challenges that you and I face. And I think there's a strength in this, you know. You can compare yourself all you could use Jesus as the example, right, of what it means to be a Christian. Obviously, he gives you the example. But you're never going to reach that standard because he is God. But the saints are people like you and me, and they rose to the occasion. So you can expect perfection from a God, but when a person in the midst of torment and suffering is able to rise to the occasion, it signals an opportunity for us to excel and to achieve. And this is where I think the value of the saints are, and I tied it in to our guest that day. You know, that as Armenians, I can attest to the power of the saints. Armenia being a tiny landlocked country at the crossroads of three continents, its history is almost exclusively one of wars, terror, even genocide, yet the power of love has been the only constant. And where have we gotten that power of love? Through the lives of the saints, through the living examples that they've given us. Love has been the only weapon, the weapon of choice that has ensured its survival. So basically, as an Armenian Christian, I have this opportunity to witness to that salvific process. Now, all that in the context of Dr. King, think about this. Okay, we were gathered there last week at the St. Leon Cathedral with all these different people. And you think about the saints over there, the invisible ones that are remembered in there by prayer and certainly by the consecration of the edifice that we were inside. But we also have living saints that we can relate to. And we shouldn't be scared of putting people just like us, right? They don't need to be canonized by the church for us to refer to them as saints. They're just like us, but they were able to rise to the occasion. And certainly Dr. King. I mean, we just celebrated his 50th anniversary of his March on Washington and the famous, the iconic I Have a Dream speech. But just last month, we marked the passing of Nelson Mandela, an icon of freedom. In him, we found a man who fought and won against the powers of evil with the power of love and forgiveness. Certainly Dr. King, another example, bringing about civil rights movement without shedding blood, opting for non-violent resistance. And so I used these examples as an opportunity and for us really in looking at Dr. King, not to just look at a man and not to look at his words and I have a dream and I don't have a dream, I did this or I did that, but rather how does it relate to us today? How can we make ourselves the new Dr. Kings? And it's by living that life of the saints, understanding that the saints are people, not gods. And if they can do it, we can do it. Anyway, I'm going to put a link on our show notes to the actual speech that I gave, and I'd be happy to share it with you. And I'd love to hear some of your comments. And I'll put a few other links too to the Dr. King, and which, by the way, Dr. King always, always, always would mention that he's not just Dr. King, but he's Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. He was a minister of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so I'm going to put a few other links there where you can kind of explore some of the writings, some of the teachings of Dr. King, and as well as some of the links to some of the work that we've done through the In His Shoes ministry. And you'll find that these are opportunities for all of us to look at people and not be scared of calling them saints, non-saints, but basically opportunities for us to advance ourselves by looking at their examples, by learning from them, by absorbing their teachings. And in all, you know, it all comes down to Christ's teaching. Dr. King never minced his words. He said, "I am a disciple and I am a minister of the gospel of Jesus Christ." Dr. King was very influential. He was influenced by Gandhi. Where was Gandhi? Gandhi, of course, not a Christian, but again, influenced by Christ. He was a student of Tolstoy. Tolstoy goes back to Christ. I mean, it all comes back to this idea of loving your neighbor, loving your enemy, and finding the strength in that love. That was what Christ taught. Taught us that there is a strength to change even the impossible, to change even hatred with the power of love. Okay, how about the song of the day? Okay, let's move to the song of the day. We'll be back in a couple minutes and we will hear an interesting interview with a dear friend of mine, Haraj Chilingerian.
Thank you.
Armin Chakmakyan playing off of the Ceremonies album. That is a song called Enchantress. We'll put a link on today's show notes so you can check out not only this song, but all of his wonderful music. And do check it out. Do support the people that play on this show. All right, I said a few minutes ago we're going to have a guest. Actually, we were together a few weeks ago, right at the turn of the year, New Year's, and we were able to catch up in Los Angeles. Dear friend of mine, Harash Chilingirian, he was visiting the West Coast along with his family. We had a chance to catch up as family, but also catch up on some of the interesting issues that have been coming up in the church. And we started talking about this and that, and one thing led to the other, and I said, Harash, how about talking about what's going on in London? Because it was fascinating for me. He was telling me about some of the headway that they've made over there in establishing parish. And sometimes we take that idea of parish as for granted. And he shared some insight on how to put together, basically, the floor plan of how to put together a church. Yeah, and it is a floor plan, right? Okay, it's not the building, but it's a floor plan. Anyway, we got up together. We're sitting in a backyard. It's a beautiful Southern California afternoon. You'll hear the birds chirping. You'll also hear some trucks driving by, as well as some helicopters and planes. Hey, that's part of being out here in Southern California in the winter. Being able to be outdoors. Anyway, here is Dr. Harash Chilingirian. He is a professor at Oxford, joining us for this interview. Excited today to catch up with Harash Chilingirian. He is visiting here in the Los Angeles area for the holidays, and caught up with him in the valley, of all places, outside. So we're sitting outside, sipping on some coffee, and talking about some important issues. Harash, welcome.
Thank you. It's good to see you.
And it's great that you, thank you for making the time to be with me and
it's a pleasure.
Share with our listeners some thoughts, because many times I refer to you, and so our listeners know about you, but today we
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to listen to the podcast and catch up with what's going on in Los Angeles and with you there, Harash, with your ministry.
Why don't we start off with that, catching up with Los Angeles a little bit. You come from London, quite a bit different. Quite a bit different landscape as well as peoplescape. Tell us a little bit about...
Yes.
Let's begin there.
Probably, as you know, Europe is quite different from American society. American society tends to be more closer to faith and religion, while Europe is generally more secular and less religious comparatively. So in that context, it also obviously affects Armenian communities in Europe. In our case, in Great Britain, we have a relatively small community of 15,000-20,000 Armenians living in Great Britain. We have two churches in London and one in Manchester. Mm-hmm. And recently we've tried to start parishes. Imagine, for 90 years in London, we didn't have a parish. So about 2 years ago, we established the first Armenian church parish in London at St. Sarkis Church. And it has created a lot of interest and excitement in the community, especially among young professionals who are interested in spiritual nourishment.
Now, that's an interesting demographic you're citing. I mean, young professionals, you don't usually think of them as being members of parish in the Armenian Orthodox, at least, sense. Certainly in the Catholic sense you do see it, but talk about that. How do you possibly attract, starting off brand new, how do you attract?
Yes, I think in general, I would say, whether in London or Los Angeles, Paris or Beirut, in the 21st century, I believe we have to go back to the basics of our faith, the basic message of Christianity. I think over the centuries, church administration, traditions, dogmas and canons and whatnot. It has piled up, and we have this 2,000-year-old institution, and I underline the word institution, which has a lot of noise, but the message is being lost in this sort of noise from different perspectives. So I think what the church needs to do is bring back that key message of Christian faith, mm-hmm. which is, as we all know, is faith, hope, and love. Mm-hmm. The most basic values, the most basic teaching of Christianity is about love. So I think we have to start from a common denominator where, whether young or old, society today can start, we can create a common denominator where we have a common understanding on which we can get deeper and deeper into the theology and understanding of our faith. Mm-hmm. Rather than starting with the theology, deep theology and dogmas and canons and so on and so forth, which is the case, I believe, now. So it's kind of turning it around mm-hmm. and starting from the basics and building up our faith.
Young professionals receptive to this? They're
In my experience, they have been. Of course, I'm not saying that it's 100% true, but you see that the way we present our Armenian Christianity today, the language, the terminology, the discourse we use makes a big difference. Because generally, people in modern times, they're looking for meaning, for spiritual fulfillment, and they have to receive this from somewhere. If it's not the church, it's going to be through, I don't know, yoga or through reading philosophical books and whatnot. So, and we have this tremendous treasure in our church, the accumulated wisdom and treasure, spiritual treasure, that we haven't been able to really give to our congregations or our people today. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I think about it, I mean, look around these self-help books that are very commonly used or read by people. Some of them are, you know, bestsellers. A lot of it is common sense, but also you see when you look deep into it. For instance, about diet, you know, one of the seven deadly sins is gluttony. Today, you know, a lot of people are thinking about dieting or losing weight or healthy eating and so. I mean, it's already with, you know, the church has been talking about this mm-hmm. for centuries, but instead of using a language where it's considered a deadly sin, we could talk about the same thing in terms of modern understanding and show that, you know, actually it's not the church and our faith is not very different from our common understanding of everyday life. So the challenge is, how do we make our faith relevant to the 21st century life? This is the biggest challenge.
So in the search for relevancy, let me ask from the other side then. Okay, you've presented me two models, and you say that, okay, you have the model of the sin is the gluttony, and we look at it, and weight loss and everything. Why would somebody want to say, okay, well, why do I need the church? I already know that it's wrong for me. I already know that gluttony is wrong. I know that, you know, my doctor told me I need to lose 20 pounds. Why do I need...
Yeah, I think this is a very important question that you raise. The church is important as the word itself, you know, the ecclesia, because you're talking about a community as opposed to an individual. Mm-hmm. And human beings are social beings. So we are our lives receive meaning, or our lives are fulfilled, nourished, and so on, by associating with a community. And that community starts in the home, because the family is also a micro community in and of itself. Mm-hmm. And then from the community, it's the larger family of cousins and grandparents and so on and so forth.
Sure.
And then you have the larger community of, Armenians or, whatever ethnic identity you have. So this sense of community and belonging to a community is very important. And in spiritual life, it's very important that you associate, you practice your faith in the context of a community. And Christianity is very much a communal faith, as opposed to some other faiths, where you don't have to be part of a community.
Private, personal religion is so important today. How do you get around that? I mean, what you're advocating is a communal religion, and really what popular, you said it earlier, right? If they don't find it in religion, they'll go to yoga. Yoga's a very personal experience, right? And personal, I have a right to express my belief the way I want to. How do you get around that?
I think this is the key issue now in terms of, this whole secular. We live in a secular age as opposed to a religious age. Mm-hmm. Until modernity, until the 17th century and a little earlier perhaps, religion and church was very much part of your daily life. You had, even the kings or the monarchies were under the auspices of the church. Or religion was very much part of your being a member of society. Of course, that has changed over the centuries, and we've become very individualistic societies where individual choices, individual opinions have taken precedent over communal concerns. And I think this is also touches on non-religious issues as well, taking care of the elderly or human rights or whatever. So we've become very self-centered in the sense that my comfort and my needs take precedent over anything else. As an individual, you can go into a mountain and a cave and live your life,
right.
if that's your choice. But you choose to live in society, right? So we make choices there. So being in a community is also, in my view, it gives us an opportunity to understand who we are. Because society or our immediate community that we associate with and live in is sort of a mirror of ourselves. Because it is only through our interactions with others that we can learn who we are. We might have an idea, or we might be quite confident who we are and what we are, but you test that with your relationships, with your connections with others.
Mm-hmm.
And through that, we as if purify ourselves spiritually, intellectually, and in all aspects through this interaction with a community or with the larger society.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's this very dialectic relationship.
Right.
And this is where, of course, there is a personal faith aspect within Christianity, but there is also the communal aspect.
Mm-hmm.
And I always give the example of, being a soldier. You cannot be a soldier on your own. You have to be part of an army. Otherwise, you're just an individual warrior or whatever that may be. But you are not a soldier unless you belong to a larger group, a larger community of like-minded people. And this is where that, as you said, the personal faith and religion has to somehow be connected to a community.
It's interesting because you're advocating for a obviously we want relevance in the church, right? You want relevance. You want a connection to relevance. And relevance today is to be true to yourself, not to any collective. Mm-hmm. So it almost seems that it's at odds. But let's push it a little bit more and talk about the bigger community, the bigger opportunities for community, especially because of technology. I know you've been a pioneer in technological use of technology to do your working, but how does it relate to the church, especially watching the Arab Spring unfold and the use of technology, how it really changed the way people interact with the larger picture, with their countries. Now bring it down to a church like ours, where it's so traditional with its headquarters, with its leadership. Where does that individual find a voice in that place?
I think you're right. I mean, technology has changed the formula, so to speak. It has given a new dimension to people in order to carry on their demands or their movements. I would say that it's not the technology as such, but it's still people, individuals. The technology is a means. It gives a further voice or further dimension or range to your voice. But it's not in and of itself. Just because you have Facebook account or a Twitter, it doesn't make a difference. But it's what you want to.
But we saw the whole downfall of governments. We saw the downfall of administrations, of leadership. And by what? By one man sitting there and tweeting something. He wasn't waiting for a company. He wasn't waiting for a church, for leadership. He said, I'm in charge of my own destiny. I'm tweeting this out. And we saw regimes fall.
Yeah.
Okay, and you look at what's going on in the church. A lot of times when we are critical of the church, we have probably the most intense of all leadership right now, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's run by a few hierarchs and their wishes. Even if few is even a little bit too much, right?
I think, any change or sustained movement, it needs more than technology. Mm-hmm. I agree with you. It's ultimately, people who have a common goal or common discontent with leadership or whatever that brings them together. But it's not just, I think sometimes media oversimplifies things, mm-hmm. as if it's just, with few emails,
right.
It was the downfall of dictators. I think it's more than that. It takes resources, it takes money, it takes organization, when you look at the recent events in Ukraine, you have people making sandwiches to feed the people who are in the square. It's not just technology, or it's not just, let's get into the square. You have to sustain a movement to reach an impact. And in our case, it's always, it's a very short-lived outrage or discontent or, it goes away within, very short period of time. And people are either, they don't have the time, they're not interested enough. They say, let others continue this. So it's not as if it's not a critical problem for them individually or as a community. Mm-hmm. So, they show support, they sympathize with others who are trying to do something, but it has a limit that they don't want to go more than that. Mm-hmm. So it boils down to, again, how relevant this problem is to them. If you are in Cairo, you know, if you were there 2 or 3 years ago, everybody was pretty much at the same level in terms of disgust about, you know, how the government is run, mm-hmm. about problems in their daily lives, you know, from buying bread to, you know, the most basic
right.
aspects of your life. So, again, how the importance people give to a problem makes a big difference. Mm-hmm. And right now, in my view, I don't think people in Armenia or in diaspora give enough importance to the issues and the problems in the church.
Right.
You know, they read about it. They say, oh, yeah, this is very true. Oh, Der Vasken, you're right. You know, this is what we need. But that's the extent of it. Mm-hmm. Because they say, oh, this is not my problem. It's someone else's.
Right. Yeah. So let's go back to London. You did make some big changes in attitude, I think. I think from what I've read, from what I've seen, you have and we'll put a link on our show notes today to some of the videos you've produced in the last few years. From what we see, there's a new enthusiasm towards church. Mm-hmm. So that's a change of attitude. That's a change in the way people perceive that relevance of the church. Can you give it as an XYZ formula, or is it more...
But if I could reduce it to a couple of concepts
right.
or foundational ideas, at least in my experience, when we started the thinking about the idea of starting a parish in London. Of course, it didn't happen, you know, through one meeting or, oh, let's do something. It took about 2.5 years of preparation to get there. Because we had to educate people, first of all, people in church leadership, about what is a parish as opposed to a church building. Hmm. People didn't understand this because... So I spent a lot of time, nearly 2 years, explaining people the basic difference between a parish, a community of worshippers, mm-hmm. and a church building where you go anytime you want, and, you know, light your candle and, you know, get your liturgics and so on. So to me, the preparation is the most important aspect of any, you know, successful outcome. Mm-hmm. And you have to put a lot of time and energy and thinking. So we did a lot of preparation for about 2 years and 2.5 years. And the basic idea that the message was about why do we need a parish, we came up with the idea that a parish is where we will try to live three basic Armenian Christian values: faith, hope, and love. That this was the purpose of establishing a parish.
So you actually articulated that?
Yes.
You said that.
Exactly. So our literature, our message, I used to, after the church service every Sunday for a period of time, I would get up and explain to the congregation these three ideas and the idea of parish. Mm-hmm. That if you want for us collectively to live these three values, these three graces, these three gifts from God that has been given to us at our baptism, each Armenian Christian who's been baptized has been given these faith, hope, and love. Havat kuiser, yev magurdutyun, of course. So that was the starting point. That was the foundational concepts, mm-hmm. values that we started on, and people understood that. They saw the relevance, but it was quite easy to understand. Why is it that we want to come together? Mm-hmm. And so this was our basis, that basically the parish is not about giving annual dues. Mm-hmm. We didn't talk about money at all. We didn't even know how much to, how much the membership dues would be until our first parish assembly. So until for 2 years we didn't talk about it because it wasn't about the money. Right. Generally, people have this idea: oh, the church, all they want is my money, and otherwise I can go, and light my candle. So it was all about. Basically, we tried to build the church without the building. And this is what we need to do now, especially in the West. We have to have a church community even without a church building. Mm. Because you could have the building, but not the living church in it. Mm-hmm. But if we create the living church, it doesn't matter what building, which building they are in it. But they can be a community of Armenian Christians worshiping together virtually anywhere.
Right.
So, and this was, to me, very important approach that we had the building for 90 years, but we needed to create the living church, which is the parish. So it was from this point of view that we started to educate and talk to the people, rather than saying, oh, you're baptized Armenian, it's your duty to pay your annual dues and support your church, and you know, people, this is very old mentality. People are tired of this kind of discourse because they don't need it. But if we say that we want you to come together with all of us here so that together we can try to make faith, hope, and love part of our daily living.
Uh-huh.
Then you say, maybe there is something of value for me that I could benefit and contribute. And this is the starting of the dialogue with our faith. That's what I mean when I said earlier that we have to come to the common denominator, the simple message of our faith, and start there. And once you build that community of faith, then you can add people who explore, they want to know what is the meaning of the Badarak, what is the meaning of the certain aspect of the church. They want to know more about the Christology of the church, or so on and so forth. So it has to come, the demand has to come from the faithful himself or herself, rather than the church kind of imposing this from top down and saying, this is it, take it or leave it. You have to allow people to explore on their own and find the depth of their faith.
Well, I would argue that just the people's absence from the church is their call to us that they want it. I mean, they're absent from the church is telling you that there's something.
Yeah.
They're saying, I want something fixed. This is fascinating, and I appreciate you taking the time to share these thoughts with us. How about some parting shots? It's what we call Armenian Christmas, the theophany, revelation of God, and I would love to hear from you. What does that mean to you that God is revealed on this weekend? What is this special feast within your life, within what you do? I'll use the word ministry. It is a ministry that we all have.
Deraskan, the way I look at these festive days, I think it's important that we understand them not as a once-a-year event or commemoration of events in Christ's life or in our faith or religion, but we have to live these events in our faith on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. So we have to be born sort of every morning when you wake up and you have to die every night when you go to bed, in a symbolic way,
of course,
in your faith. And because God, as we know in our churches, God is always present. It's not in the past, it's not in the future. God is always now. And this is the most difficult aspect for us as human beings, to live the now. Mm. We're always thinking about the future, what we want to, what we wish to accomplish, and so on and so forth, or what we have done, either good or bad. It always reminds us, you know, of our past. The biggest challenge, as if in life, is to live now, the present moment. And God is always in the present moment. Mm. And if we realize that, then we will have a completely different approach to this, what is a church community, what is faith. Right now, for us, it's an institution, it's a historical, right. You know, it's Echimeradzin and Krikorlu Savoric, you know, it's a history, it's the past. We're not thinking about it as if it's this very moment now that we're talking. This is where God is. This is where our faith has to be now. So all these feasts reminds us of that, the present, mm-hmm. the now moment, because Christ, of course, historically or chronologically, he was born 2,000 years ago, but we're still celebrating, mm-hmm. because he's also being born at this very moment,
right.
as we speak.
Very beautifully said, and I think it's a fitting way to bring an end to this. I want to thank you for taking the time, being with us, and wish you all the best.
Thank you. Thank you. It's always a pleasure to have you.
Yes. Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview, and I hope it gave you a lot of food for thought. Love to hear from you. Do chime in. Do drop us some email. Let us know what you thought about it. Some of his thoughts. Let's share it, okay? Drop us an email at feedback@epostle.net.
This is Susie for In His Shoes Ministries. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I wanted to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world. This means we must avail ourselves to technology's latest tools. Your donations help us expand and deliver this message to a waiting world. Please support us by pressing on the donate button at epostle.net. Thanks for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, for that important reminder. And it is important because, you know, if we believe in this, we have to be willing to go all the way. We need to put it out on the line. And it's important to have prayers. It's important to have support, financial, otherwise, whatever way you can help, we appreciate it. Hey, you know, one of the easiest ways to support it is just to like us on Facebook, is just to forward it to your friends. Take the link for our podcast. It is a freebie, you know, it's a free download. Just send it out to people. Let people know. And for all of you who do that, hey, thank you. God bless you. Keep us in your prayers always. Well, that brings us to the end of today's show. I want to thank you for joining us. I want to thank especially my friend Haraj Chilingaryan for joining us for that interview, that candid interview, and it gives us a lot to think about and a lot to absorb, digest too, right? Hey, listen, love to hear from you. Do get involved with us throughout the week. We are at epostle.net. Very easy to remember. That's apostle with an E. Apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe. You can hear us on Stitcher. You can hear us on our app. You know, just download it, put it on your smartphone. Hey, for the wonderful people who put together today's show, for Susie, our producer, Ken, our engineer, for Bahar Abraham, this is Father Vazgen, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
we trust you've enjoyed and been blessed by this edition of The Next Step with Father Voskin. We invite you to join us every week for our regular broadcast. This, as well as all other episodes of The Next Step, are available for streaming and download at epostle.net. In addition, you can stream, download, or subscribe at Apple's iTunes Store, Blueberry, and Stitcher Radio, or try our smartphone app. New episodes are available globally every Thursday. To write to us with comments or questions, please direct your message to feedback@epostle.net. Your kind prayers and donations ensure the continuity of these quality broadcasts. We invite you to point your web browser to epostle.net, where you can enter your email address to have The Next Step delivered directly to your inbox. For the production crew and all the members of In His Shoes Ministries, this is Susie, looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week. And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Take your breath, cat out!